This is the NBC University Theater, presenting Aldous Huxley's brilliant modern novel, After Many a Summer Dies the Swan, another in our series of radio plays based on outstanding works of Anglo-American fiction. Norman Cousins is our intermission commentator, and our stars, as Dr. Obispo and Joe Stoit, are Paul Henreid and Alan Hale. The grandfather of Aldous Huxley was a man who was one of Britain's most famous scientists. A man who believed that science and advanced human knowledge would bring peace and understanding to the world. His grandson, in turn, passed through a stage where, in a series of witty novels, he attempted to prove that to believe in almost anything, including science, was a form of delusion. With the passing years, of course, Huxley's philosophy has undergone great change and development. But in all stages, his writing has been sharp, destructive of pretense and stupidity, and amusing. In After Many a Summer Dies the Swan, Huxley views a portion of the American scene. Views it through the eyes of a balding, middle-aged English scholar named Jeremy Portage, fresh from the literary atmosphere of London, and slightly bewildered by the strange new world of California in which he suddenly found himself one day in 1939.
I was reading Wordsworth when the train pulled into Los Angeles station. Not that I'm overly fond of Wordsworth, but my instructions were to search for a tall chauffeur in a grey uniform, and, I presume, his were to track down a middle-aged Englishman carrying the poetical works of William Wordsworth.
Mr. Porrick, sir. Welcome to Los Angeles.
Oh, Mr. Stoit, chauffeur?
That's right, sir. I'd have known you by your voice even without that book.
Ah, yes, my voice. Why is it that in America I've only to ask for a cup of coffee to draw gales of laughter? Quite provoking.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Oh, never mind. If you'll collect my box at the window, we'll be off. Mr. Stoit's motor car rode exceedingly smoothly, and I abandoned myself to the pleasure of looking as Southern California rolled past the windows. We were traveling westward, and the sunshine lit up each building and sky sign as though with a spotlight. The billboards were most emphatic.
Do things. Go places with Consol Gas.
That's one of ours, Mr. Portage.
Oh, what's that?
Consol Gas. That's Mr. Stoit's company, sir. He's president. Oh.
Broken romance. Science proves that 73% of all adults have halitosis.
Beverly Pantheon, the cemetery that is different. Funerals are not expensive.
Well, that's ours, too.
You mean the Beverly Pantheon?
Finest cemetery in the world, I guess. We could stop by if you'd like to see it. Oh, look there to the right.
Beverly Pantheon?
No, that's where Ginger Rogers lives.
Oh.
Yes, sir, Ginger Rogers. Pantheon's down the road, son.
You, too, can have abiding youth with thrill form figure control.
Oh, that's Groucho Marx's place over there. Here we are. Beverly Pantheon.
Beverly Pantheon, the personality cemetery.
That's the Tower of Pisa, isn't it? Except that it doesn't lean.
It's the show place of the Beverly Pantheon. Mr. Stoit had it straightened special. $200,000, that's what it costs. Yes, sir.
We went through a whirlwind tour of the Beverly Pantheon. Everything. The pet cemetery, the poet's corner, the black marble vestibule of ashes, leading to the supermodern oil-burning mortuary furnace. And finally, the Pantheon itself. And over all, the inescapable crooning of a perpetual Wurlitzer automatic organ. This new heaven of the Beverly Pantheon seemed to promise all the more conventional delights, with the added joys of everlasting tennis, eternal golf, and millennial swimming.
Some class, the Pantheon, eh, Mr. Portage?
Oh, yes, definitely. Out of this world, what?
Now, look up there between those hills. There it is. That's Mr. Stoit's place.
On the summit of the bluff, as though growing out of the rock, stood a castle. The thing was Gothic, medieval. Medieval not out of historical necessity like the castles of France and Germany, but out of pure fun and wantonness. Platonically, one might say. It was medieval as only a witty and irresponsible modern architect and engineer is equipped to be.
Want a ride, Mr. Proctor?
Oh, hello, George. Nice of you to stop for me.
Always glad to, Mr. Proctor. Oh, this here's Mr. Portage, Mingling. I'm sure he won't mind.
Oh, not at all, no.
Pleased to meet you, sir. All right, George. Visiting Mr. Stoit, Mr. Portage?
Here on business. I'm to catalog the Hoburg papers. Mr. Stoit's just bought them. A historical treasure, you know.
Oh, you're a scholar, huh?
Well, a bit.
A scholar and a gentleman. Well, there are worse types of human beings. I might almost claim to have been one myself long ago.
Oh, you're not William Proctor, are you? Not the one who wrote Short Studies in the Counter-Reformation. Well, I'm jiggered.
Remarkable building, the castle, isn't it? Oh, poor Joe Stoit. Think of having that millstone round one's neck.
Well, I shouldn't exactly think it a millstone.
Well, neither does Joe, but it is. Perhaps it might help you if you knew about Joe. We were at school together, he and I, only nobody called him Joe in those days. We called him Slob or Jellybean. You see, Joe was a fat boy, and how we punished him for his glandular deficiencies. You might remember that fat boy when you meet the man. Help you to understand. Well, here I am at home. George, I'll get off here. Have a good time, Mr. Portage.
Thanks.
Mr. Portage, my name's Stoit. Joe Stoit.
Well,
you're older than I thought.
For the sere and withered leaf, you know, one sinking into...
Well, what's your age?
54.
Only 54? How do you do with the ladies?
Mon beau printemps et mon été en fait...
What's that? There's no use talking foreign languages to me. You ought to do those old papers, aren't you? What the devil's the name of them? I just bought them. The Roebucks or...
Hoburg.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What were you saying about women when you started that foreign stuff on me?
One was implying it was normal for one's age.
Well, what do you know about what's normal at your age? You go talk to Dr. Obispo about that.
Dr. Obispo?
He's on salary. He knows everything about long life. You want to see the castle?
Well, that's very kind of you. I've already seen your burial ground.
What? What's that? My burial ground? What the devil do you mean?
Well, I understood. Well, that is that you own the Beverly Pantheon.
Oh, that. Well, don't say that again. I got bum arteries, you know, and I can't get excited. Obispo warned me. Well, come on.
It is a large castle, isn't it?
20 stories. We'll get down to the hospital now. The Stoit Hospital for Children. They call me Uncle Joe.
They do?
Yeah, poor kids. Makes me feel like I'd kind of like to cry. And by the way, Mr.
Portage.
Oh, have you got a religion?
More or less.
The late Mrs. Stoit was very religious. She taught me a slogan. God is love. There is no death. Good one, huh? There is no death.
Well, I see. Yeah.
Used to be a text over my bed when I was a kid. Orange letters on a black cardboard. It is a terrible thing to fall into the hands of a living God. Different, isn't it? Now, what the devil made me bring that up? Well, never mind. The blazes with the hospital. We'll go up to the roof. I got a pool up there. We'll have a swim before dinner.
From the swimming pool was remarkable. One had only to turn one's head to see successive vistas of plain and mountain, green, tawny, and faint blue. If one turned the other way, one saw Miss Virginia Monsible poised on the diving board. Miss Monsible was, the chauffeur informed me she was a particular friend of Mr. Stoit's, and in his friends, Mr. Stoit was particular. For she was, she was excessively beautiful with not much bathing dress to conceal it.
Uncle Joe, you're feeling kind of good.
Oh, feeling fine, baby.
Doesn't the sun feel good?
Oh, Ginny, baby, I'd just like to eat you.
I'm tough.
A little tough kid.
What'd you bring old Baldy here for, Uncle Joe?
Oh, to catalog some old papers I bought in England. He looks funny, doesn't he?
Floating around the pool like an old Buddha. I'm going to dive in and duck him.
Now, don't go away, baby. I did some business this morning. I made a lot of money.
How much?
$500,000.
Uncle Joe, I think you're wonderful.
Oh, it's easy, baby. Easy.
I say you're wonderful. So just keep your old mouth shut.
Stop it now. You're tickling me.
Oh, my wonderful Uncle Joe.
Well, if the deal goes through, I'll make you a present. What would you like?
I don't know. I never really want things bad. Uncle Joe, I don't think I want anything.
Oh, that's what I like about you, baby.
No, I don't want anything.
Don't you, Virginia? Well, I do.
Obispo! Don't pussyfoot up like that. I don't like to be startled. I don't like it at all. Not at all.
Mr. Stoit, I don't advise you working up a temper. Anger is a poison, my friend, and not a slow one. But if you want to shorten your life instead of lengthening...
All right, all right. Well, what do you want, Doctor?
To be precise, I want to inject 1.5 cubic centimeters of this stuff in the great man's gluteus medius. So off with you, Virginia.
Oh, Sig, you're an old meanie.
Hop along, Angel.
You think you're Tyrone Power or something, don't you?
Ready for the injection, Mr. Stoit?
Obispo, I don't like the way you talk.
I suppose you don't. It makes your blood boil. But when your blood boils, your blood pressure goes up, and... Well, you can't afford to be angry with me.
Obispo, I
put you on your feet after that last stroke, Mr. Stoit. Without me, perhaps next week. The week after. Within the year.
Don't talk like that. I don't like it.
But if I continue my research, perhaps 10 years more for you, or 20, or 30, or even... well, there is no guessing about that.
Oh, you think there's a chance, Obispo? You really think that...
That, my friend and benefactor, time will tell. Ready now for the injection? Roll over.
Oh, be careful with that, Tompkins. Those papers are valuable.
They sure got them crated up solid. I got them. There.
Beautiful, aren't they? Hundreds of years, Holberg after Holberg, knights, barons, earls, records, letters, papers, never catalogued. Look here. 1576.
Yes, sir, that's right. Mr. Portage, I'll be going, if you don't mind.
Joe, here's something. A copy of the Marquis de Sade. I've never even seen one.
Gracious, what an imagination. Delicious.
Yes, sir. Just call me when you want them other cases open. Hello, Dr. Obispo.
Hello, Tompkins. Don't let me disturb you. I said, don't let me disturb you.
What?
My name's Obispo, Dr. Sigmund Obispo, physician in ordinary to His Majesty King Stoit I.
Oh, yes, I saw you at the pool.
Quite a stack of words you got here, eh? What a drivel.
Hmm?
A string of words, religion. Another string, philosophy. I don't know how you liberal artists stand it. Don't you pine for some sense once in a while?
It's a great deal of fun, you know. Just scrabbling about in the dust heaps. Mustn't worry about the meaning.
Well, you're frank, anyway. Most of the PhD boys are blasted snobs. At least you admit you're in your racket just for fun. That's what I'm in mind for. Say, is that book the Marquis de Sade?
Well, it, matter of fact...
It is. Quite a man. Mind if I borrow it? I've got a particular use for a book like this.
Well, but I
thanks. Come on down to the hall and see my laboratory.
Well, really, you know, I should. I mean, these...
They've waited 500 years. Come on.
Well, I suppose they can wait.
Longevity is my racket. I wouldn't be able to follow it if I was in practice. Devil of a nuisance looking after patients. That's why I've fastened on to Joe Stoit.
Oh, he's concerned with longevity?
Concerned? The old goat is scared silly. It's a panic with him, fear of death. And I've been living on that panic for 5 years. It's a researcher's paradise. I've got everything I need with old Joe thrown in as a guinea pig.
Cooperative, hmm?
Yes, he's ready to submit to anything, provided it gives him some hope of staying above ground a few years longer.
Oh?
Interesting thing, old age, isn't it? Why should dogs be senile at 14 and parrots alive and kicking at 100? Or a fish live to 200 without signs of senility, While poor Joe's stoit... here we are.
Ah.
Fragrant, eh? It's our mice. We've got nearly 1,000 of them.
Hello, Doc.
Oh, my assistant, Pete Bone. Pete, this is Mr. Portage.
Oh, glad to meet you, sir.
Oh, pleased to meet you.
Pete's a bright boy. Here, look at these mice, Portage.
Lively, aren't they?
They're shot full of what I poured into old Joe this morning. Not that the old devil needs it with young Virginia
I'll
around.
I'll go get the diet sheets, Doc.
Well, put my foot in it again.
I beg your pardon?
Poor old Pete. He's fantastically in love. Thinks our Miss Monsiple's like something in Tennyson. You know, chemically pure. Well, if it makes him happy, I won't spoil it. Speaking of Uncle Joe, take a look at this.
Fish, by Joe.
And what fish? Joe had them stolen from an estate in Europe. They've got rings in their tails. Dated 1761.
1761?
Those carp are nearly 200 years old. Perfect health. No reason why they shouldn't live another 3 centuries.
Incredible.
There's something about the flora in the intestinal tract of those fish. Something that kills the poisons that produce senility. Something that...
rather a fountain of youth.
Go ahead. Laugh, friend. Laugh. But we are working on the operation. It will transfer that something from the carp to, now we are working on mice. After that, larger animals. And if it works all right on dogs and baboons, it ought to work on Uncle Joe.
We had dinner in the small dining room. It was the sort of place you think of when you hear the word cafe, with original Fra Angelico murals on the walls for a spiritual touch. Mr. Stoit was with us, and Miss Monsible. Dr. Obispo spent the hour telling stories to the lady while young Pete gazed at her with a rapt pre-Raphaelite expression. After luncheon, Virginia, Pete, and the doctor went off to feed the baboons.
Here now, Virginia. Throw the potatoes to them.
Oh, aren't they cute? Absolutely divine.
Divine is an adjective I hadn't thought of applying to baboons. Here, look. Throw the rest of the food.
You know, that old fellow's looking seedy, Doc. He won't even come eat.
He's hungry, all right. He's just afraid to leave his lady friend. Here, Angel. Throw this potato in front of him.
Okay. There.
He's taking notice now.
So's that young chap on the rocks. Look at him. He's just waiting till the old boy gets away so he can dash for the lady.
Come on, funny face. Go get the carrot. Here.
And there goes young Lancelot swooping down on the lady. That's young love for you.
Oh, aren't they cute?
The old one's too busy eating to notice.
Aren't they cute? Aren't they human?
Mr. Proctor would say it the other way around. Aren't we baboon-like?
Oh, that's silly.
Oh, I don't know. He's a pretty smart man, Mr. Proctor. Say, look, as long as we're half down the hill, why not let's go see him?
Oh, get Mr. Proctor to go see you. Old Probby scares me stiff. And besides, I think I've got a headache. Couldn't you give me something for it, Sig?
Mens sano in corpore sano, eh?
Does it taste bad? I don't like nasty medicine.
No. It's Latin. Sound mind in sound body. Well, the mind has just been demonstrated. The body is evident.
You talk too much, Sig.
I know, dear, I know. But only a trifle of it filters down into that pretty head. If you're not going with Pete, come on back to the castle, and I'll read you an old book I borrowed from our English friend.
Who's interested in old books?
Don't worry. You will be in this one.
Well, Mr. Portage, did you meet the ogre of the castle?
I remembered about Jelly Belly. That made it easier, Mr. Proctor.
Oh, poor Joe. I remember even at school he was the kind of fat boy who bluffs it out, fights back, buys popularity with ice cream, and believes it when they say he'll go to hell. Poor Joe. But that's life. And speaking of life, Pete, How's the work going?
Oh, so-so.
If you succeed, what happens?
Why, life is prolonged.
Yes, I know that, but I meant something else. A dog, for example. Isn't that supposed to be a wolf that hasn't fully developed? Sort of unborn wolf?
Well, yes, there is a theory like that.
Hmm. It's a tame animal because it doesn't have time to grow up to savagery, is that it?
Sort of, yeah.
But what will happen with man? What would he grow into if you lengthened his life? You know, Pete, time and craving. That's our life. Now, what are you offering us? Another 200 years of time and craving?
Time, Mr. Proctor. Time for good.
Well, time doesn't guarantee good, my boy.
But you can fight for good, Mr. Proctor. We fought for good when I was in Spain.
Yeah, and you'll find, Pete, that evil comes even out of those fights for good.
But what do you expect people to do when they're attacked by fascists? Sit down, let their throats be cut?
No, I expect them to fight. People generally do, and the results are generally disastrous. I should like them to try something more effective someday.
But that's cynicism, defeatism. It's a thing I don't...
Hey there, Proctor. Oh, here comes the Lord of Stuart Castle. Yeah, what is it, Joe?
Why the devil can't you leave my man alone?
Which man, Joe?
My estate manager. You've been bothering him about these blasted farmhands again. Now, what do you think you're doing, and what's the idea?
The idea? Well, it's an old one, Joe. Your manager's treating those harvest hands like vermin, not like men and women. They haven't enough to eat.
Ah, you're trying to make reds out of them. You're a lousy agitator.
Well, I thought we were talking about eating.
Now, I've put up with you for years, Bill, but you're making the place dangerous for decent people. I'll have you run out of the valley. I'll see that you're... I'll see that... Somebody get me a chair.
Oh, wait a minute. Here you are, Mr. Stoy, sir.
Thanks. Mustn't get angry. Obispo said so. Terrible thing. Terrible to fall into the hands of a living God. Terrible.
What's the matter, Joe?
No, nothing. I'm better. It's all right.
I've got something to show you, Joe. Been meaning to. It's a sun motor. Runs my electric generator.
What? What the devil do you... And why do you want to do that?
Well, I'm trying to see how independent I can be from the city. A little Jeffersonian democracy.
You're turning back the clock, Bill. You're going against progress.
Am I? Well, don't worry about it, Joe.
Oh, you're a crackpot, Bill. I guess you always will be. But remember what I said. You stay away from my manager. I'm the boss on my estate.
Mr. Stoit forgot all about his blood pressure and the living God and felt suddenly happy. It occurred to him that in spite of everything, Bill Proctor liked him. In a glow of good feeling, he went home to his castle and, straight to Virginia's boudoir.
Oh, Uncle Joe. Uncle Joe.
Oh, hello, baby. Glad to see me.
Oh, Uncle Joe.
Good afternoon, Mr. Stoit.
Obispo, what are you doing here?
I was worried by that cough of yours at lunch. That's why I came up here to catch you when you came in. I'm not going to let you get influenza if I can help it.
Oh, is that it? Well, I feel fine. There's nothing wrong with me.
I'd like to listen in. Open your shirt.
You know, he's right, Uncle Joe. You wouldn't want anything to happen.
Well, all right.
Now breathe in deeply. Breathe.
Night fell on Stoit Castle, and the long halls were shrouded with shadows. In his room, Pete Boone was dreaming of Virginia, trying to equate his vague yearning for political and religious justice with the warm glow that he felt when he considered Miss Monsible, even objectively. While in the young lady's room, the object of his adoration was busy redecorating her toenails.
Oh, darn. Polish is coming off my toe. Darn it. Ooh, that polish stinks. Uncle Joe? Uncle Joe?
Good evening, Angel.
Say, what are you doing here?
I thought we might have a little talk. After all, we were interrupted this afternoon.
Sig, you're crazy. Uncle Joe would kill you if he'd find you here. Why, he'd pull that gun right out of his pocket and
he won't. Take the word of a medical man, Angel. Uncle Joe will sleep through the last trump. I've just seen to that.
I think you're awful.
Don't let me interrupt your labors. Proceed with your paint job. A woman's work is never done.
Sig, I don't like the way you talk.
The polish is running.
Oh, darn. I don't like your getting fresh with me. Uncle Joe almost caught you this afternoon.
With my trusty hypodermic, my dear, I disarm all suspicion.
Yeah, but you're not even romantic or anything. You just laugh at me and you make dirty cracks. Well, it isn't even nice.
I admire the way you flirted with young Pete this evening. Uncle Joe was hopping jealous of him. Poor Pete.
Just wait till I get time for you.
Mind your toenails.
Ooh, you.
It takes a professor of pharmacology to put an old buzzard into a coma with a few drops of this and that.
I won't have you calling Uncle Joe a buzzard.
Well, shall we say a senile, foul-smelling goat?
Why, you dirty... Uncle Joe's a better man than you'll ever be. I think he's wonderful.
You think he's wonderful. But all the same, in about 5 minutes, you'll be kissing me.
What? Oh, you filthy, dirty, nasty...
Look out, you're spoiling the polish on your toes.
You just wait till I'm finished.
I don't believe I will. You know that perfume of yours is strong enough to cut right through the stink of that polish.
Darn you. Get away from me, no good.
Virginia, I believe you're going to kiss me now.
Are you rotten ape?
That's much better.
And, in the master bedroom, under a 25-foot mural of the crucifixion of St. Peter by El Greco, the Lord of Stoit Castle slept with a revolver under his pillow and with fear sitting at his bedside. Crawling, damp fear. In his dream, the shroud flapped, and he heard the squeak of the screw as it clamped down the heavy lid of the coffin.
From Hollywood, the NBC University Theater is starring Paul Henreid and Alan Hale in a radio play based on the Aldous Huxley novel, After Many a Summer Dies the Swan, another in this series devoted to outstanding works of modern British and American fiction. In presenting this radio adaptation, we do so in the sincere hope that it will encourage our listeners to an actual reading of the book, since it is impossible, of course, in a single hour, to do full justice to Huxley's work in all its implications. These productions are part of the NBC College by Radio plan. And information on how to enroll in college-supervised courses and how you can obtain free materials on the authors and books presented in this series will be given at the close of the program. Now, here is our intermission commentator on Aldous Huxley's work, the distinguished editor of the Saturday Review of Literature, Mr. Norman Cousins, speaking to you from New York.
Well, by this time of the program, we can tell a few things about the author of After Many a Summer Dies the Swan. It is clear from the dramatization of today's book that Mr. Huxley has a supremely well-developed imagination, an imagination nourished by a rich diet of wide knowledge and fortified by a keen and perceptive intelligence. We can tell that he has an uneasy and compelling curiosity about life and people, and that this curiosity leads him far beyond the established frontiers of science, though he comes from too eminent a family of scientists and trained thinkers not to know exactly where that frontier begins, or rather ends. We know that Mr. Huxley is serious about life in general, and we know that he has a good deal of fun with human beings in particular. We know that he has a talent for impish satire, that he loves to fashion full-length distortion mirrors of people, hoping, perhaps, that they will undergo a sort of shock of recognition to enable them not only to understand themselves, for understanding without purpose is like building materials without the architect's blueprints, but not only that, but to develop a sense of values about life that can give real meaning to human history. Like H.G. Wells, Huxley sees the novel as the effective means of dramatizing ideas, and he has written novels of ideas in the best sense of the term. Ideas that give you a chance to break away from stereotypes and thinking, and from the absurd notion that our own time, in our own time, civilization has reached its pinnacle. In reading Huxley, and here I commend you especially to Point Counterpoint and Ape in Essence, you know that he has absolutely no doubts about the ability of human beings to make science and the machine obey their most fantastic wish. But science and technology, by themselves, cannot create purpose in life, nor can they create happiness. Even supposing that man discovers, as Dr. Obispo of today's book thinks he can, the secret that can prolong the lifespan hundreds of years, what difference will it make? What difference will it make if we have nothing to show for it? If, as the result of living six centuries, instead of 65 years, we are still floundering around without having developed a sense of inner harmony that puts us at ease with our neighbors, and indeed, with the universe itself. What difference will it make unless we can live creatively, purposefully? For the big need right now is to justify the gift of life. After that, we can worry about extending it.
Thank you, Mr. Cousins. Our dramatization of After Many a Summer Dies the Swan, starring Paul Heinried and Alan Hale, continues from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification.
Muddling through the Hoburg papers was completely fascinating. The fifth Earl of Gonister, about 1789, writes as follows. If men and women did woo as noisily as do cats, what Londoner could ever hope to sleep o' nights? There speaks the 18th century. But in the 20th century, life in Stoyt Castle came rapidly to a rolling boil. The baby, Miss Monsible, had that inward dreamy look of young ladies who discover that love does not necessarily go with the largest checkbook, while Uncle Joe became chronically ill-tempered due to jealousy of, oddly enough, young Pete. On the longevity front, Dr. Obispo swore constantly that soon we should all be living as long as crocodiles. But for those of us doomed to shuffle off the mortal coil, there is always the Beverly Pantheon, Joe Stoyt, president.
Now, the total profit, Mr. Stoyt, comes to over $500,000 for the three-month period. Not bad for a boneyard, eh, Mr. Stoyt?
Don't talk that way. Close that door. That caterwauling organ ruins my digestion.
Sure, Mr. Stoyt, sure.
Now, what did you get me over here for? I don't like this place. I don't like cemeteries.
Look, Mr. Stoyt, I've got a great idea. You know that ridge up by the tiny Taj Mahal? Well, I figure we can dig right under it and make a catacombs.
What?
A Class A catacombs, like in Rome. Say, how about a Chapel of the Martyrs with a nice plastic group of girls being eaten up by lions? People would get a big kick out of that. Sex appeal in death. What a promotion.
Listen, Charlie, and I don't like that idea, too. And there's another thing. Some young fool out there had the nerve to show me a place they... Well, they said they'd save for me. Fire 'em.
Sure, Mr. Stoyt, sure.
You can get the estimates and plans for your cave, but no martyrs.
Not even one day, Mr. Stoyt? Just one?
No martyrs, and that's final. Call my car. I want to get out of here.
Well,
Hello, Joe. What brings you down among the peasants?
Now, listen, Propter. I want to talk to you. You know about people, don't you?
In a way, Joe.
Well, then you tell me about Pete Boone.
He's a confused young man, if that's what you mean.
Well, I want to know what I should do about him.
Why?
Well, Ginny keeps patting him like a big dog. If the kid would only make a pass at her, I could throw him out. But you just can't fire a big dog.
You still like your Virginia, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. She makes you feel good. Like when you get tanked up on scotch, or when you give a toy to a kid. She's kind of... Well, she's kind of like a daughter.
But more than a daughter, eh, Joe? Better than a daughter. A combination, is that it?
Sort of. But she's changed. She isn't... she isn't the same. And I haven't been feeling good. That blasted cemetery always gets me down.
Nobody left, eh, Joe? No friends, no religion, no philosophy, and only Virginia left.
There's no sense to anything. That's what's wrong.
It's an idiot world, Joe. We all live in an idiot universe. Of course, we can't all afford to build it out of concrete and steel the way you did.
You mean the castle? What's wrong with the castle?
Nothing, if you can stand idiocy.
Never mind. Never mind the whole thing. I can never get a straight answer out of any of you lousy professors anyway. Forget it. I never should have talked to you in the first place.
No. No, Joe, you shouldn't.
And you lay off those harvest workers. You've been stirring them up. This is my place, Bill. My place.
Working on the Hobart papers kept me busy during the day. Most of it was dull, merely accounts, legal documents, and business letters. Not at all my cup of tea. But at 12 o'clock, I found the parchment-bound notebook belonging to the 5th Earl of Gonister. The first entry was July 1780, and as I read, I could hear in my mind's ear the strong voice of the 5th Earl, author of this remarkable journal.
July 1780. One of the church livings in my gift being vacant, my sister sent to me today a young divine whom she commends for his virtue. But I will not have him. Give me the parson who drinks deep, rides to hounds, and games the night away. Such a parson tests the faith of his flock. And it is thus we come to salvation.
Wicked old fellow. Let's see now, let's see.
March 1784. Open the old tombs beneath the house today.
Hello. Tombs beneath Gonister House? That'll cause quite a ripple in England. Let's see. 1789, 94, 95.
I'm an old man now, weak and shrunken. Without desires.
Oh, so the 5th Earl suffers from Uncle Joe's complaint. Well, well, well.
July 1796. There are carp in the fish ponds at Gonister with leaden discs, which were attached to their tails in the days of Charles I, these 100 years ago.
By George, so he's on to the carp, too.
I marvel at the strength and unimpaired agility of these great fishes. The secret of eternal life is not to be found in old books or even in heaven. It is to be found in the mud and only awaits a skillful angler.
The secret of life in the mud. Well, won't that give Obispo a jolt? His best ideas on longevity anticipated in the 18th century and by the 5th Earl of Gonister.
You mean some old fossilized earl was onto the carp theory? Well, can you tie that?
Oh, you're not annoyed.
Why the devil should I be?
Well, your theory, I mean, it's been anticipated.
Let's hear more about the 5th Earl. You say he lived till 90?
More than 90. 96 or 7. And, died in the middle of a scandal once more.
Oh? What sort of a scandal?
Well, he seems to have had a tendency towards
homicidal pleasures.
Killed somebody?
Not actually killed, just damaged.
The old Buzzard's line. The secret of life is to be found in the mud. That's almost a definition of science.
I was up to 1796. The old chap was feeling pretty seedy.
A pharmaceutical tragedy. I'll bet he could have been fixed up with a week of injections. But get to that diary. Let's hear the old goat speak for himself.
Oh, certainly, certainly. January 1797.
Why should a man die a 70 years and 10 when a fish can retain its youth for 2 and 3 centuries? Man cooks his food before eating it and generally throws away precisely those organs of the fish in which it is most reasonable to assume that the substance preventive of decay is contained.
Good Lord! Don't tell me the old buzzard is going to eat raw fish guts.
That's exactly what he is doing. Listen.
My first 3 attempts provoked an uncontrollable retching. At the 4th, I was finally able to retain a few spoonfuls of the nauseating mincemeat.
Talk about courage. I'd rather go through an air raid than that.
February 1797. It is now a month since I began to test the truth of my hypothesis. And I'm now ingesting each day not less than 6 ounces of raw minced viscera of freshly opened carp.
Good Lord. The fish has more parasites than any other animal. It makes my blood run cold.
Oh, you needn't worry. Diary goes on, you know. March, improved in strength. April, horseback riding again.
Blast it all. This is more than a joke. Raw fish guts, prevention of senile poisoning, and rejuvenation. Rejuvenation.
And in October, he's been out fox hunting, after which there's no entry till 1799.
3 years.
There's an entry a little further on. The age of 81, the 5th Earl is the proud father of a bouncing baby boy.
In 81, what do you think of that?
And here in 1820, he seems to be in the prime of life. For in 1826, he's taken on a new housekeeper called Kate. And in 1831, he has repairs made on the dungeons of Garnister House.
And how about his health?
Oh, he seems to take it for granted. Now, wait. Now, listen to this. March 1834...
Priscilla, my young serving girl, has escaped from a subterranean place of confinement. Unfortunately, she bears upon a person the evidence that for some weeks she has been the subject of my investigation. She holds in her hands my reputation, and perhaps even my liberty and life.
Well, there it is. That's the scandal. The old devil. The girl must have told her story. Well, what next?
I can't really make it out. It's devilish odd.
My funeral will be conducted with all the pomp befitting my rank and virtues. My only regret is that I shall be unable to leave my subterranean retreat to see the pageantry of woe. I go now to my own private hell, deep beneath the walls of Garnister House.
And that's all. There's nothing else, just 2 more blank pages and then the end of the book.
And nobody knows how long the old buzzard lived on?
Not outside the family. There's an old woman living in Garnister House now, Lady Jane Hoburg, last of the line, but of course she's...
Porridge! Do you realize what this means? Why, the 5th Earl could be still... He could be.
Oh. Bless me. I suppose he really could.
Porridge! We've got to find out. I'm taking the next boat to England.
Crazy. You're absolutely crazy. Why are we going to England?
It's a secret, Angel. I haven't even told Uncle Joe yet. But take it from me. We'll go.
Well, I wish you'd go somewhere. I don't mean England.
Harsh words, Angel.
Well, I mean it. I don't like the way you act. I feel like I'm double-crossing Uncle Joe all the time.
You are.
Besides, I haven't been able to say my prayers. I don't like you, Sig. I don't like you at all.
Still, there isn't much you can do about it, is there? You make up your mind that you hate me, don't you? That you won't speak to me again? Won't even look at me?
Oh, Sig, go away.
But you can't keep that promise, can you? You don't mean that at all.
Hi there, Portage.
Yes, Mr. Stoyd?
Come on up to the roof with me. I want to talk to you.
Oh, yes. Why, of course, yes.
Get in the elevator.
Oh, thank you.
I had a rotten time today.
I'm awfully sorry.
Oh, it was that blasted cemetery. It always gets me down. I'm going up to see Virginia now. She always makes me feel better. Wouldn't know what to do without her. She's mine. She loves her old Uncle Joe. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. Well, here we are.
After you, Mr. Stoyt.
Sig, if you kiss me again, I'll hate you.
Sure, Angel, sure. Go ahead, hate me.
Baby! Obispo!
Uncle Joe!
You snake! You dirty, slimy, filthy snake! I'll kill you! I'll kill you!
No,
I'll...
No, Uncle Joe, no, no! Look out for that gun!
I'll kill you! Ginny, get away! Get away, I'll...
You're a lousy shot, Uncle Joe.
Ginny, let go of my arm. I'll get him this time.
No, don't shoot, Uncle Joe!
Let go of him, Ginny. Let him shoot if he dares.
Yeah, if he... What do you mean, if I dare? I'll kill you, Obispo.
No, you won't, Uncle Joe. Because then you'll die, too.
What? What's that?
If you kill me, it won't be long before they got you stretched out under that black marble mausoleum at your Beverly Pantheon.
What? What the devil do you mean?
I've just found a new way to keep you alive. But without me, you'll be a dead man in a month.
No, no. No, you don't mean that. That isn't so. That isn't true, is it, Obispo?
You've had a stroke, Joe. But I've got good news for you. There's a chance we've found the secret of life in the mud.
You found it? What is it, Obispo? What is it? I've got to have it. Now.
Drop the gun, Uncle Joe.
What? Oh, yes, the gun, sure. What is it, Obispo? I'm going to live. I'm not going to die.
We'll see, Joe.
Well, you've got to keep me alive, Obispo. You've got to.
After you tried to kill me?
Oh, it was an accident. I didn't mean to. You can't let me die when you know how to stop it. You just can't.
If you don't mind all, I'm going to sit down.
Well, you've got to keep me living. You've got to. You can have anything you want. I can pay for anything.
Anything? Well, Uncle Joe, now you're talking turkey. Yes, sir. You're talking turkey.
The Stoyt private airplane whisked the party to New York, and then to Gander, Newfoundland, and to Shannon, Ireland, and finally, the modern Chariot of the Sun set down rather roughly at Croydon Airport, London. Consul Gas supplied a tremendous black limousine, and off it drove through the diluted London sunshine down into the country towards Gonister House. Mr. Stoyt sprawled under a fur rug in the back seat. He was on sedation by the doctor's order, so he slept fitfully as the car roared on. Dr. Obispo was at the wheel, while Virginia sat aloof on the front seat.
I dreamed I dwelt in marble halls.
Oh, shut up, will you, Sig?
No fear, I'll wake Uncle Joe, honey. He's out like a light.
Will you love me in December as you do in May?
I could kill you.
Why not? It's open season on doctors, but don't worry. Angel, we understand each other, Uncle Joe and I. We even understand about you.
I dreamt I killed the golden goose that laid the golden egg.
Stop it!
What? What's the matter? What's wrong?
She objects to my singing. Goodness knows why. I have a charming voice.
Oh. What is it? Are we here?
Right, Uncle Joe. Gone is the house.
I don't like it, Uncle Joe. It's scary.
Oh, it's all right, baby. It's all right.
Look out for those creepers on the path. Not much of a garden, eh? It's all grown over. What's the matter?
There's someone behind that bush.
Where? Come on. Come on out, youngster.
Look what I've got. I've got a gas mask. That's what I've got.
Oh, that's nice. A gas mask all filled with flowers. What's your name?
Millie. I'm nine.
Nine?
Granny says I'm undernourished.
Oh, does your granny live here, Millie?
In the kitchen. She's deaf.
Do you like candies?
Huh?
What the devil do they call candies in England? Oh, would you like some sweets? Let us in and you can have them all.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, they're nice chocolatey sweets. A whole box of them.
Well, all right. Come on. Right along this hall.
I don't get this, Obispo. I don't understand why we're here. Why can't you tell me?
Don't get worried, Uncle Joe.
Obispo, can you prove absolutely there's no such place as hell?
Can you prove the wrong side of the moon isn't inhabited by green elephants?
Oh, no, seriously, though.
Don't butter me with nonsense.
Well, do you think hell is possible?
Everything is possible. Millie?
Yes, sir?
Where's the cellar door?
No!
What do you mean, no? Just show us the door to the cellar.
I won't. I'm afraid. There's gas down there.
You don't have to go. Just show us. If you don't, you shan't have any more candies, sweets. Give them back. I'm going to eat them all myself. They're good. Poor little Millie. She isn't going to have any more sweet chocolates. They're so good.
I want my sweets.
Not till you show us the door to the cellar. Hold that flashlight up, Angel.
I'm scared.
Oh, this is crazy. I don't like this, Obispo. It's damp down here and... Well, I'm not well.
You stick with us, Uncle Joe. Maybe we can fix it so you won't have to find out about hell. Wait a minute. There's a door.
Well, is it locked?
No. No, wait a minute. Come on.
Ooh. Oh, that smell.
Oh, pretty bad. Come on.
Oh, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. What do you think you're going to find down here?
Stop being a sniveling baby, Uncle Joe. I'm not sure of anything. For all I know, you may die in 5 minutes.
No. No, don't say that.
Well, come on, then.
That smell's getting worse. It's awful.
Around this corner. Keep that flashlight up. Here, give it to me. I'll go ahead. There's an iron bar door here. Wait till I get it in my focus. It doesn't quite... Ha ha ha!
What? What the devil?
What's the matter?
What's going on, Obispo? What are you laughing about? What? Good Lord.
That, Uncle Joe, that's the feet late.
What? For Lord's sake, what?
My hairy old proctor was right. It's an unborn ape that had time to grow up. Look at him. Look at him, Uncle Joe. Here, look at him in the light. Look at him, Joe. It's still good. Look at his face. Matted hair, deep eye sockets, no eyebrows. And look at that forehead. Dirty, wrinkled. And that shelf of bone jutting out over his eyes. Look at him, Joe. Look at him, scratch. Look at him, Joe, the feet late.
But what is it?
It's a man. Look at that ribbon across his chest. That's the Order of St. George. You're looking at the noble lord there, the fifth Earl of Garnister.
No.
The fifth Earl of Garnister. 201 years old last January.
But
But what happened to him?
Just time.
Time?
He never died, so he had time. Time for a man, the unborn ape, to grow to be...
Get me away, it's awful.
It's the best joke I ever heard. It's absolutely the best. We don't have to experiment anymore. We know it works.
What do you mean?
You can start taking the stuff at once, at once.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, yes. If you're willing to become like that, you can live forever. Well, what do you say, Uncle Joe?
Bispo, how long do you figure it would take before a person got like that? I mean, it wouldn't happen all at once. There'd be a time while a person, well, you know, while he wouldn't change any to speak of.
Oh, no. No, you don't mean... Uncle Joe, want to be...
Well, once you got over the first shock, I mean, it's better than dying, isn't it? He looks like he has a pretty good time. I mean, in his own way, of course. Don't you think so, Obispo? Well, don't you think so, Obispo?
The curtain falls on our dramatization of the Aldous Huxley novel, After Many a Summer Dies the Swan, the 12th in this series of radio plays based on outstanding works of modern Anglo-American fiction. The adaptation for radio was written by Ernest Canoy. Our intermission commentator was Mr. Norman Cousins, editor of the Saturday Review of Literature, and our stars were Paul Henreid and Alan Hale. Paul Henreid can currently be seen in the motion picture Hollow Triumph. Alan Hale can soon be seen in the Warner Brothers Technicolor picture, The Adventures of Don Juan, starring Errol Flynn. Today's cast included Ramsey Hill as Jeremy, Ted Von Eltz, Lynn Whitney, Tony Barrett, Ralph Montgomery, Donald Morrison, Marlene Ames, Earl Keane. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Original music was composed by Albert Harris and conducted by Henry Russell. The production was directed by Andrew C. Love. Next Sunday at this time, the National Broadcasting Company will present a full-hour drama document entitled Mother Earth, starring Eddie Albert. The NBC University Theater will resume December 26th with a seasonal play based on Alice in Wonderland. Productions of the NBC University Theater are currently being used in conjunction with college home study courses in Anglo-American fiction under NBC's National College by Radio plan. This plan permits NBC listeners to obtain college-supervised, organized education at home by means of radio listening and supplementary study. For full information about the authors and how to take advantage of this home study plan, which has been developed by the University of Louisville and is currently being developed at other colleges and universities, send a penny postcard to College by Radio Courses, National Broadcasting Company, New York 20, New York. That's College by Radio Courses, National Broadcasting Company, New York 20, New York. This program came to you from Hollywood. Get set for one of the brightest evenings in your entertainment week. Sunday on NBC means good music, grand comedy. In other words, really fine listening all the way through. Yes, for the best time of your life, the best time is tonight on this NBC station. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.